Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody to another fabulous Friday night on The Bone Collector. So, tonight's topic I picked was sea serpents of the Finger Lakes because three of the 11 lakes in the Finger Lakes system have passed down for generations legends of serpents that live there. But there's also quite a few sea serpents that live in Lake Ontario and in the St. Lawrence River. So I'm going to touch on what I can tonight, but I always find these really cool short articles in local papers. And this one is from an April 13th, 1887 edition of the Democrat and Chronicle. The titles of these articles are what grab me. The title is Bullets Could Not Kill Him. And this is out of Paterson, New Jersey. And a saloon keeper named Henry Grube fired two bullets into his head the night before this article came out. And in the morning, the doctors found him drinking beer in his saloon. Apparently, the bullets went through his brain, but he shows no indication of dying and says he is comfortable. It's just a quick little news blurt that they like to put in the papers from around the country, I'm guessing. Just because, I guess. And then I had quite a few people today or this week tell me that they're headed to Salem, Massachusetts for vacation. One is going a few weeks before Halloween, so they're going to get the whole treat of the witching season up in Salem. And a few people have told me that they just came back from Salem, Massachusetts, one of my favorite places to visit. Now, every so often things pop into my head, as you all know. And this popped into my head that, my family came to America on my mom's side to Massachusetts. I wonder if at all possible they were by Salem or had anything to do with the witch hysteria and the witch trial. Lo and behold, I do a little bit of research. And I have an accused Salem witch in my family tree. So Elizabeth Walker Carey was born in 1650, and she married Captain Nathaniel Carey, who is a uncle far down the line, because this was in 1674, and I'm only 47. We'll be 46. Or 46. I'll be 47 next week. Anyways. They lived about 30 miles from Salem. And in the whole witch trial and the Salem witch hysteria in 1692, in a year span, 200 people were accused of being witches, 30 of which were found guilty of the crime, and 19 were executed, 18 by hanging, one by crushing with a big rock. And they have exciting news. Pretty much, they believe identified where Gallows Hill was. However, off the topic of my dear, dear aunt, Elizabeth Walker Carey, she was accused of being a witch. And Mary Walcott, Abigail Williams, and Mercy Lewis, who were some of the major players in this whole fiasco, accused her of being a witch. May 29th, 1692, she was brought to Salem for an examination by the magistrate. And she denied the charges. Of course, everybody denied the charges because it was just so many theories. But I do believe it stemmed from some teenage girls being bored and during the winter months. That's one of the going theories on this. Anyways, she said she never even knew who these three girls were, but they did a touch test. Now, if you're not familiar with the touch test, if an accused witch touches the person who said they were a witch, and they fall into fits and, you know, convulsions and stuff, then it would be obvious that they were guilty. If there was no reaction to the touch, then they were innocent. Pretty much in every case, the accused was guilty. And as you guess it, in my dear, dear aunt's case, several women in the room fell into fits and convulsions, and she was ordered to be held in a prison at Boston until she was tried. Now, 3 days after her trial, her husband was accused of a witch, but they chose not to pursue those because of his high notoriety and his standing in the community. Now, under the rise that his wife would not get a fair trial and Boston was so far away from their home, he had managed to get her moved to Cambridge, which was closer, and he developed a plan. He knew she wouldn't get a fair trial, so Nathaniel helped Elizabeth escape from prison, and then now she's a fugitive on the run. She first went to Rhode Island and then to New York until the whole hysteria was over and she could return home. In the meantime, all of Nathaniel's goods and properties were seized and he was arrested. But soon after his capture, his goods and himself were released. Well after the trial ended and the whole witch hysteria played its course, Elizabeth returned to Charlestown and lived out the rest of her life until she died on August 30th, 1722. So how many of you can say that you have an actual witch or an accused witch in their family tree? Just the things that pop into my head, and then I'm like, huh, I wonder. Now on to tonight's subject of lake monsters. There are three, like I said, three of the Finger Lakes that have sea serpents in them, purportedly. I have not seen them, but I wish I could. It's our own little Loch Ness Monster, or Champ for Lake Champlain. And we're going to start with the farthest away, which would be Cayuga Lake. Cayuga Lake is the longest of the Finger Lakes, and it is one of the deepest lakes in North America at 435 feet deep. So you can only imagine what lives at those icy depths. Now, we have Old Greeny, who is the resident of Cayuga Lake. The first sighting was reported in 1828. So that's almost 200 years that there's been sightings of Old Greeny and Cayuga Lake. And of course, newspapers would always print the encounters because that was good newspaper material. People would buy these, read all about the sea serpent, read all about so-and-so who was almost eaten alive. It almost kind of reminds me of when I talk about sea serpents, the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, Release the Kraken, which I have a Kraken tattooed on my right arm because, you know, we gotta represent the cryptids out there. Anyways, if you want a really cool tattoo, great artwork, just go and see Andy at Physical Graffiti. Does a fabulous job. He does all my tattoos right now, and I could not be happier. Anyways, 1886 encounter of Old Greeny. The Cayuga Lake sea serpent has been heard from again, this time in the vicinity of Atwater's Landing. We were several rods from shore, leisurely rowing about when we saw a large black object suddenly rise from the water to the height of several feet. A snake, 30 rods to the north of us, but its head as it appeared about the water seemed to be fully 2 feet broad with large bright eyes. Makes it sound kind of scary, doesn't it? Probably a log. That's what everybody says. Probably a log. Then again, he appeared in 1894 when they thought that it was a swimmer that had been swimming around 300 feet from shore for over a half an hour, just swimming and swimming and swimming. And they finally grabbed a pair of marine glasses, which would be the same as binoculars, and saw that it was not a man swimming, but a large serpent with a with its head high above the water, but it was not in range of the possibility of any animal to exist in the lake. Kind of weird. I also saw one that, well, this one says in 1897 that a reporter from one of the daily newspapers was waiting for the monster to make an appearance. And this one, he was a little scared. He did not want to do it. And really none of them wanted to do that. And he had quite an encounter of his life. There have been people that says that the Old Greeny, they thought, was like a man and swimming into a lake with a hat on. Because that's the typical attire for swimming on Cayuga Lake, is to wear your hat. And I think that the most recent sighting, final appearance, was in 2009. In December of 2009, it says, I've been face-to-face with Old Greeny, not more than 100 feet away from me as I stood on the northern shore of the lake 8 or 9 years ago. It raised its triangular, tooth-filled jaws with aquatic plants hanging from its half-opened mouth to break the surface for only about 3 seconds before once again submerging. Sounds like a movie plot. But I'm not going to knock the fact that there could possibly be sea monsters in our Finger Lakes and our wonderful Lake Ontario and all the other connecting waterways. Now, the Seneca Lake serpent lives in the lake just next to Cayuga Lake. And people believe that both of the lakes are connected by some underground channels. So possibly Old Greeny and the Seneca Lake sea serpent could be one and the same. Now, Seneca Lake is even deeper than Cayuga Lake. Seneca Lake can reach the depths of 618 feet, which all of the legend of the Seneca Lake sea monster started with the Native Americans, who believed that because of this depth, that nobody knew really how far the lake went. It just didn't stop. You could never find the end, that it was bottomless. And that because it was bottomless, a monster lived in a lair deep, deep into the blackness. Now, of course, people seeing a sea serpent and people actually touching a sea serpent are two different things. July 14th, 1899, the Otatiani, which was a side wheel steamboat out of Geneva. And it would go from Geneva and go down to Watkins Glen. It would stop at places around, there was little ports along Seneca Lake that it would stop at. It was traveling to Geneva from Watkins Glen. It was going back to its home dock. And when it got around Dresden, the boats, everybody on the boat, especially the boat captain, saw something a little strange in the water. And they thought that it was a boat that had overturned. So they were concerned that it might be somebody that needed some help. So they lowered a small lifeboat type boat into the water to go and inspect and view the wreckage. But they found out that it wasn't wreckage. As they approached what they thought was the capsized boat, it started to slowly move away. Now, for some reason, the captain decided to give an order to chase this beast. And the beast turned and charged the steamboat. And it raised its head, and of course people say that it had two rows of razor-sharp teeth. And the boat captain ordered the pilot of the boat to ram the sea monster with the bow, and with the intention to either capture it alive or tow the dead carcass back to Geneva. They hit the boat, or they hit the monster, and they just kept going over where they had seen it. And at full speed, the paddle wheel struck the sea monster, and it with such a force that it knocked everybody off of their feet on the boat, and killing the sea monster. They say that its spinal column had been broken and it was dead. Now, lifeboats were deployed and the whole deal was they were going to tie some ropes around the carcass in order to tow it back to Geneva. They found that it was too big and too heavy for that, and it sank to the bottom of the lake. Now the ship docked, went back to Geneva and docked, and of course there was so much excitement that when the passengers and the crews got off, it became a typical fish tale. And they described the creature as being anywhere from 25 feet in length to 90 feet. Now, to the luck of everyone, there just happened to be a professor on the ship. And he was able to give a very detailed description of the monster. And it was brown in color with a greenish tinge, with a white, creamy white belly. The eyes were brown like a fish and they didn't wink, and he had some horny substance that covered his body, and the sheep's teeth were as sharp as a shark but in the shape of a sperm whale. Now, you got to understand that it was just minutes after the creature was killed to the point that they couldn't grasp him and he sunk to the bottom of the lake. But he did get a very detailed description of him, and it's a very cool article to read. However, it's funny, is a week after the incident, a Geneva reporter suggested that the passengers of the steamship had stopped at several of the wineries on Zeneca Lake, and perhaps to see creatures and monsters of all shapes and sizes was just the after effect of the wine. Someone tried to shoot at the beast in 1914. The last sighting of the Seneca Lake monster was in 1995. Now, the interesting thing is, on August 5th of 2015, the city of Geneva passed a law that made it illegal to hunt, trap, or cause harm to the serpent termed as the Seneca Lake Monster. Possession of the carcass of said creatures or any live creatures meeting the description of the sea monster will be considered presumptive evidence of a violation of this section. That's a pretty unique law. That's very cool to take your heritage and your legends very seriously. Don't touch our sea monster. And the final one is the Silver Lake sea monster. The Silver Lake serpent was first seen in 1855 by four fishermen, and they thought it was a log coming towards them until it started to move in unlog-like ways. Their exact words, unlog-like ways. And it started undulating from side to side like a snake. Then it leapt out of the water, plunged back in, and disappeared. Between that sighting and the end of the summer season, over 100 people were reported to see it. And people would come from hundreds of miles for just the chance to witness the Silver Lake sea serpent. Local businesses were the benefactors of this whole thing, especially the Walker Hotel that was run by Artemis B. Walker. And unfortunately, on December 19th, 1857, the Walker Hotel caught fire. And after the fire was put out, and the firemen did their initial walkthrough to assess the damage, the true identity of the sea serpent was discovered. In the attic of the hotel was the carcass of the beast, and it was made of canvas and wire frame, and it was the scheme that was come up by Artemis Walker to bring more people to the lake and drum up more business for his hotel and his all the other local businesses. And he got the idea from a local Native American legend. But if you know anything about the Finger Lakes, Seneca Lake at its deepest is like 30 feet deep. Definitely not a great hiding place for sea serpents. Artemis Walker was kind of run out of town, and he moved to Canada for a few years. And then when he thought that enough time had passed by and he thought people forgot about it, he moved back to Silver Lake and he rebuilt his hotel. Now in 1976, it says that the sea serpent was constructed by Walker and Truman Gillett from waterproof canvas, paint, and wire. They forced the air through the hose connected to the monster to cause it to surface, and the ropes were used to tow it to various corners of the lake shoreline. Now, of course, I've been kind of making light of some of these stories. And in June 15th, 1858, this is one of my favorite articles about the Seneca Lake sea serpent. This appeared in the Buffalo Daily Republic. "We have just received the startling intelligence," says the Toledo Blade, "via towline telegraph from Ogdensburg, that the veritable sea serpent last seen in Silver Lake has again appeared. He has been seen by two sailors through a glass among the thousand islands of the St. Lawrence River. The glass was in the form of a bottle and held about a quart. Now, if you're interested in the Silver Lake Sea Serpents, they do hold a festival every summer in Perry, New York, and definitely a sight to see. There's sculpture. There's some really cool sculptures, metal sculptures in town about the sea serpent, murals, books, everything that you can possibly put your hands on about the Silver Lake Sea Serpent. So I thought we would get to some of the Lake Ontario ones, and there are quite a few. Chemeau Bay had a sea serpent in 1877 that was the size of a hull of a small boat. This one is, he rose out of the water 20 feet and had a tremendous roar. That's the first time that I've really heard or read that the animal, creature, monster, serpent, whatever it is, vocalized to its witnesses. So we talked about some sea serpents in the Finger Lakes. There are just many, many more stories of them. Also stories from Lake Ontario, stuff that I'm putting into a book that I'm working on. Now, what's going on in my neck of the woods is no shows this weekend, that I will be at Under the Apple Tree Sunday. And then next weekend, I'll be at Artist Row. I'm so excited. About 150 artisans at the Rochester Public Market. Plus, there's also that seance at the secret location on September 24th. Tickets are available by link on my book page. Not a whole lot of other stuff going on. It's fall. Tis the season for hauntings and witches and everything that goes bump in the night. Cool weather. Everything pumpkin. Some things that shouldn't be pumpkin. And apples. Just the apple stuff. Don't forget to take a walk as the fall leaves start drifting to the ground in the next few weeks. Stop and walk through a cemetery. It'll definitely give you a new outlook on places that you've just driven by and not really paid attention to. But I really don't have much more announcements going on. We're going to have a really cool ghost tour at Under the Apple Tree on October 30th. So that's a great Halloween event for everyone that would like to attend. It's going to give you an introduction to the history of the property and to the spirits that call it home. So that's all for tonight that I have. Next week, let's see. What shall we talk about next week? Let's get out the topic of the paranormal, and let's just go back to, we're talking September, so let's do some haunted locations around the Western New York area. Me think, I'll come up with some surprises for you guys for next Friday night, so we'll talk some ghosts, some hauntings, and some other cool little news tidbits from the way back past. You guys have a great Friday night and an awesome weekend. Welcome to September, one of the best seasons of the year, the haunting season. Talk to you guys next week. Goodbye.